Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, we have a very unique guest, and we're going to be talking about two different facets of athletic training profession. One that's very unique and near and dear to my heart with what she does. So I'm super excited to introduce today, Miss Shelby Janes. How are you doing today, Shelby?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm just peachy. It's a wonderful day today. It's not raining in SoCal yet, although I know you're getting hammered up in Washington State right now, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. A lot of rain and a lot of wind.
Oh, see, I don't mind the rain. I don't like the wind. That's just a bad combo because then water gets everywhere. We're going to be talking today about a couple different aspects of athletic training. You are a athletic trainer in the wonderful state of Washington up in Pacific Northwest. I love that state. It is beautiful. It's gorgeous. Such great people. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, where you started, where you went to school, and how you ended up where you're at?
I've grown up in Washington State my entire life. I went to Seattle Pacific University for my undergrad in exercise science. While I was there, I did rowing. And that was the first time I found out about athletic training as a profession because of the athletic trainers for the rowing team. And I was like, wow, that's quite incredible. So in 2020, I went into the master's program through University of Idaho. And
great time to get into a program, right?
I know. It was quite an interesting time, let me tell you. Because obviously everybody was shut down. But they already had it set up to where one time a week we would meet over Zoom. However, in the summers, we were supposed to meet in person. So the first half of the first summer, which is supposed to be very intensive in person, was over Zoom. So that was interesting. 2020, 2022, got my master's in athletic training, had quite a few different rotations through that program, clinical rotations, and graduated in spring of 22. Right now, I work in the industrial sector, and that's where I've worked the last few years.
Now, when you say industrial sector, some people in athletic training go, what? Mm-hmm. What is that? Obviously, I have a decent idea. I've got a few former interns, a couple colleagues, good friends that work in that arena. But can you explain a little bit better for our listeners who aren't quite up to date in either a different healthcare setting, or I always pick on my sister. I love her, but she's an English teacher, so she doesn't know what we do all the time. So if you could explain what an athletic trainer in the industrial setting, how they work, what they do, and talk about yours.
Yeah, for sure. The industrial sector, that's where you work with the workers that tend to work on an assembly line. That's more of your stereotypical industrial setting, but it doesn't have to be an assembly line. It could be putting together big pieces of machinery. It could be painting buildings. It's more of like your layman's job, but a lot of the time they do a lot of repetitive work in the industrial sector, again, depending on where they work and what job tasks they do. Because of that repetitive nature and working with big machinery or tools or whatever it is, they can get a lot of overuse injuries, how it tends to go down. Or if they, crush their hand or things like that, there are those injuries as well. Where I work for a large company, and I work with a lot of people that do different job tasks. Some of them work with large machines, some of them work with tools, some of them are office workers, some of them do like large scale painting. So I actually am lucky enough to work in that sector because I get a lot of variety in the industrial sector versus just seeing one set of job tasks. And so that keeps my little athletic training heart alive because I love the
I
variety.
understand that. I would get bored seeing the same thing every day, every day, every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Yeah, having a little variety, the spice of life. I love it because I sit there going, oh man, it's boring. Wait, oh, what's this? Oh yeah. Oh, okay. Let's do. Oh yeah. Total athletic trainer. You're sitting there going, come on, come on. Give me something cool. Give me something different. Let's go. I understand that. How long have you been in the industrial setting?
Only a little over 2 years now because I'm a pretty fresh out of the pot, so to speak. I haven't been in the profession very long.
I like that. Fresh out of the pot. All right. All right.
So not very long, but it's been good. It's allowed me to hone my skills because obviously, you know, fresh grad, it's really nice to just reinforce all the knowledge, the vast amounts of knowledge that we're supposed to memorize and remember in that short amount of time.
You never memorize, you learn. Now, if I understand this right, you probably had a professor or a teacher, tell me if I'm wrong, by the name of Chris Ludwig while you were
Oh,
up
yes.
there. Ah, now, if he hears you say you memorized and you didn't learn, Chris is going to leave Fresno, jump in his truck, and drive all the way up to Washington and have a little convo with you. So I'm sure you meant learn the information, not memorize, correct?
I think memorize can lead into learning sometimes.
Okay, we'll take that transition. I like that. Okay.
Like insertion points of muscles, you know, things like that. Then you learn the actions and all those things. So yes, Dr. Ludwig, I learned a lot. So good job.
Doctor, doctor. He's a doctor? Come on, Chris. You know I won't call you a doctor. You're Chris. I remember when you were the student. I love Chris. He's a great guy.
I haven't gotten to the point where I can call my teachers by their first names yet. It hasn't flipped my brain yet, you know?
Well, when that switch flips, it's all good because then you truly believe you're a colleague. So you're getting there. Don't worry. Couple more years, you'll be fine.
There we go.
When you are in the industrial setting and in your situation, are you the only athletic trainer around taking care of your patients?
No, I'm not, thankfully, which is also a unique thing as an athletic trainer. I have four immediate colleagues all around me. We spread our coverage is from 5 a.m. to midnight, and so we each have 10-hour shifts. So I don't see all of them for my entire 10-hour shift since I work 4/10s, but I do see all of them a little bit. And so it's really, really nice to be able to bounce off ideas off each other and be like, hey, can you check this out? But I do have colleagues besides that. I work at a pretty large plant. So we have close to 50 people on site, but we're all spread out because of the wide coverage area. And again, the 5 a.m. to midnight coverage. So no, I'm not alone, thankfully, which is quite fantastic. It helps me grow as a professional.
I was going to say, that's got to be fantastic as a fresh out of the pot, quote unquote, athletic trainer, to get that reassurance that you know what you're doing. Look at a colleague, say, hey, I was thinking this. And they go, yeah, that's it. Great job. Because,
right.
I mean, when we're fresh out of the pot, I'm going to be using that all day now. Thank you so much. When you're fresh out of the pot, you're sitting there going, yeah, I got this. I got this. And then you get hit with a question. Holy crap, I don't have this. Whoa. What do I do? How do I? So I know way back when getting into the profession, being on my own, it would have been very helpful and very calming to have a colleague that you could turn to with a little bit more experience to help me along in those tougher situations. So that's got to be really nice for you.
Yeah, it's really, really nice.
We did a little shout out to Idaho and a little nod to Dr. Ludwig. And so you went away to Idaho, came back to Washington, and you developed a love for athletic training while you were in college. And as you said, found it in rowing. You were a very active person growing up, but I have a feeling that it wasn't just rowing that interested you. You probably had a couple other interests. What was your biggest interest?
Yes. So I've been working with horses since I was 6 years old. So, and I've continued on. Obviously, with school, I wasn't quite as active in that area, but for most of my life, I've been riding horses.
Now, you say riding horses. I looked at your bio and went, what? So everybody's going, Eli, what the hell are you talking about now? Shelby, you need to explain to me exactly what you and your brother, but we're here talking about you. Man, it's kind of just like, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
It is.
Yes. Yeah. So, for those listening, I started out doing a sport called dressage, which is more of your, I hesitate to say stereotypical, but it is more of a stereotypical equestrian discipline where you are sitting on the horse and riding them like you might imagine you would normally ride a horse. However, when I was eight, 7 or 8, my instructor who was teaching me dressage lessons at the time, she's from Germany. And there is a big sport in Europe called equestrian vaulting, and it is in the US as well. In Germany, they're actually required to have some equestrian vaulting lessons before they are allowed to compete in any other equestrian discipline because it gives them a big foundation. So, equestrian vaulting, we like to summarize it as dance and gymnastics on the back of a moving horse. People picture like trick riding. It's kind of like trick riding, but it's not trick riding. It's a little bit different.
I know the people listening can't see the visual right now. My jaws drop. And I looked it up and yeah, it ain't trick riding. Nope,
No.
nope. It's like full-fledged gymnastics, dance, cheer
All the
on a
above.
horse
So many things.
while the horse is moving. It ain't standing still. That big guy, big gal, whatever that horsey is. It's moving, and I mean, I'm looking at a picture right now, two people, one sitting, one standing on the back of the horse while they're holding another person perpendicular above their head. Wow.
Yes. That's normally
And
the reaction I get when I explain this and show it to people.
I would imagine, because I sat there going, what?
Yeah. I
Now,
can't tell you how often I get asked if people, because they hear vaulting and they think of pole vaulting, right? And so they're like, do you like pole vault over the horse? Or they like, do you jump? Is that like where you jump the horses over poles? Like, just the name really misleads people sometimes, but it's really entertaining. The answers I get.
I could only imagine because I
Enthusiast.
was sitting there going vaulting. Well, and literally, I thought, okay, that's the one where you jump over the barriers. Vault. The horse is vaulting. Yes. And you're sitting there. Oh, I didn't know that's what it was called. And then I looked it up and went, boy, I was wrong. And
Yes.
it's been around for a long time, the history behind it. I mean, we're talking this type of thing goes all the way back to Crete, they believe, where they did this, dancing and performing aerobics on the back of the horse, and other animals. Again, my jaw was dropped for quite some time, and I'm trying to imagine practice
Yes.
and injuries
Yes.
and oh my God, things that happen. I mean, talk to me here. What was it like growing up doing this?
It's fun. It's really fun. It's actually, and this shocks people too, it's actually one of the safest equestrian disciplines, which is wild considering you're doing like stacking maneuvers on top of the horse. But we get taught how to fall because we fall all the time.
I
It's,
would think you do. Yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
And we're not the ones controlling the horse too. There's somebody called a lunger. So they stand in the middle of the circle. They have what's called a lunge line. It's kind of, it's made of different materials, but picture like a cloth material, and it's pretty thin, like maybe 2 inches across. It runs from the lunger's left hand all the way to the bit on the horse who's 20 meters away. And the horse is going around the lunger on a circle. And that horse could be going on a walk, trot, or canter, but the lunger is the one that's telling the horse what to do. Obviously, when the vaulters are on the horse's back, they do influence the horse's balance, and vice versa. If the horse isn't balanced, the vaulter is less balanced too. So it's kind of a, well, when you only have one person on the horse, it's kind of like a three-way partnership. When you have a team on a horse, which is up to three people on the horse, more people are involved, more parties. So there's a lot
That's a
involved.
hell of a party. I mean, good golly.
Yeah, it is. I also get asked, like, why don't you wear helmets when you do this? Well, imagine doing a somersault and backflips and cartwheels and just like all around the horse with a helmet on. It's actually not safe because you can get the chin strap caught. Just think of all the neck injuries when you're doing that.
Throws
So,
off your balance, neck injury, exactly. That's where I was going.
right. But the vaulter, like I said, they're taught how to fall, they're taught how to bail. You practice it a lot, especially when you get to the higher levels. Like when you're at the cantor, you've already been practicing for a long time, so you already know the basic safety parameters, and you should have some amount of strength and mobility in order to fall and save yourself correctly. Obviously, when you're on a horse that's 18 hands tall, so a horse measurement height for those that aren't aware, 4 inches is one hand. So picture 6 foot at the top of the horse's shoulder. That's an 18-hand horse. So picture their back being 6 feet off the ground. Because normally we need horses that big, especially when we're doing a team event, because we aren't gonna put three people on a pony. That's not fair to the pony. You need a big horse to carry that.
Very true. Yeah, that poor little pony.
It's all about the horse's welfare too. We don't just grab any horse out of the pasture and be like, "You're gonna be a vaulting horse. Here we go." You know, they have to like it. One, we don't want them to buck us off because it's a safety thing for us. But also, again, the horse's welfare is paramount, and it should be in any equestrian discipline.
You know what? We've done a couple other episodes and discussed equine different things, including rodeo. And no matter what, it always goes back to the horse. Anybody that works with these animals knows how wonderful they are. And as they've all said, the horse's health is of paramount. They're not so big about themselves, which is funny. They rather have the injury happen to them. Leave the poor, is my horse okay? That's always the question. Is my horse okay? I find out. Now, I'm actually looking at another image, and you say that a lot of these are 18 hand high. So I'm looking at this person running to the side of the horse as the team member on the side is about the same height as the horse. And there's a person definitely taller standing on top of the horse with an arm standing straight in the air, holding another person above their head in some type of almost like pike position, and thinking, oh my God, that lady's probably 15 feet in the air right now.
Easily, yes. Yep. There's a lot of trust involved in this sport.
Oh my God. And what did mom and dad think when you said, hey, I want to try this sport?
I know. I'm 5'10". So for the most part, my entire life, I was a base in team. So if like if you've ever like done cheer or you know that like the bases are on the ground, they're the ones holding the flyers up
Totally,
there,
totally.
right? So same concept with vaulting. And so I always felt really proud when the parents would trust me with their flyer to hold them up in the air on top of the horse. Cause like, you know, you need the parents' trust too when you're going into holding the flyer. And obviously the flyer needs your trust. Yeah, it just takes a lot of trust development on the horse, but for sure off the horse before we even get on. We have some what do I want to call them? Apparatuses called barrels, which is basically what they are. They're basically oil barrels. We have legs welded onto them just like stands, and then handles as well, because we have handles on the horse and we put padding on it. So it stimulates kind of the shape of the horse so we can practice the moves before we even get on the horse. And so that helps us also save the horse's energy, things like that before we're on.
Very nice. Yeah, I'm looking at one horse and we have somebody almost doing like a yoga pose. And I'm not a big yoga guy. I'm not flexible. That's the only reason. I believe yoga is fantastic, but it's arm pointed out, leg pointed the other direction. And I see a handle, a lot of padding on the back of the horse too. It looks very squishy and comfy, which is good because otherwise you're driving your knee right in the poor pony's back. But there's a handle on there that she can definitely hold on to. So.
And there are different kinds of handles too. People have different preferences. You can have what's called round handles, where it's just basically a little ring. You can have what's called square handles and different varieties of that, where it's more of a triangle shape. Just gives you different handholds. And we have different kinds of pads too. Some of them are thicker, some of them are thinner. It depends on if people want to be able to feel the horse's back more or a little bit less. In an ideal world, in any move that we're doing, we aren't digging in a knee or we aren't out of balance with the horse, because that will disrupt the horse's balance and our score will go down. We're supposed to be in harmony with the horse whenever possible. And that's where when you watch the high levels, it's so amazing and beautiful to watch, because they're just moving as one with the horse. And while they're doing like jump dives on the horse and, you know, back handsprings and landing back on the horse, and, you know, all these crazy moves, but they're still in harmony with their horse. So it's quite a beautiful thing to watch.
That's amazing. Now, you've done this for several years. And obviously, when you got to the collegiate level, you had to back off a little bit. But I presume it sounds like you competed quite a bit and probably traveled to compete. What were some of your highlights as a competitor?
Yeah, I mostly stayed in North America. So the farthest east I traveled was to Lexington, Kentucky, because, you know, that's where all the horse stuff is.
Gotta go there.
Yep. I also have traveled up to Vancouver, BC area, but more specifically Chilliwack, if you're familiar with that area. California is a really big area for vaulting as well, and other equestrian disciplines also. So mostly around the U.S. I had, just like your stereotypical person that gets into athletic training, I had busted my ACL when I was 14, and then my meniscus saved me 2 years later from vaulting. Horse, not involved. Horse is fine. People are all
horse is fine. That's the important part. Horse
yep.
was fine. Okay, as long as we got that.
Yep. I just landed incorrectly with some dismounts. So that definitely stilted my career. And I was just like, okay. You have to be able to stand on a horse and not be afraid of jumping off to go continue at the high levels like I was wanting to. And I was like, I would stand up and I was like, I'm just afraid I'm going to jump off and it's going to be, I'm going to land incorrectly. Because it wasn't like some crazy falls I had. It was just landing incorrectly one time. There goes my knee. So I decided to stop, but I'm still involved, obviously. I kept coaching and support my brother and all these other things.
Now, if you want to do a quick little shout out to your brother, let him know that we're thinking about him and let our fans know what he's doing.
Yeah. My brother and I were twins. So I was like 7 or 8, and he started when we were 15, which is actually pretty late for the sport. So he ended up being a natural and a hard worker. So he's gotten to the point where he's represented the U.S. At the world level, gosh, 4 or 5 times now. And he's still like probably going to qualify, hopefully, this next year. Right now, he lives in Germany and trains with the Germans, because the Germans are especially good in the vaulting world setting.
Wow.
That's where he lives right now. He's just still competing, coaching, and doing what he loves.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So shout out to twin brother, not little. Well, is he younger brother?
He's 21 minutes older.
I'm sorry. Okay. Shout out to the older brother.
The
old man. There we go. We'll go with that. Now, this love of equine and love of vaulting has kind of intertwined itself a little bit in athletic training.
Yep.
And your profession, not in the industrial setting, but what you do on basically your days off work.
Right.
And that's really why we're here, to really discuss your love and your passion of horses and helping others. So
right.
let's dive into that. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah. At my industrial sector job, I work 4/10. So that means I get 3 days off, which is fantastic. On Fridays, I teach horseback riding lessons at a local place where I actually grew up vaulting. So I teach age ranges, depending on the season, I teach anywhere from elementary school all the way through adults. I also teach a pretty unique class that I kind of stumbled upon once I graduated. It's called adaptive vaulting. Right now, I work with a lady who has MS, multiple sclerosis. And yes, we have her vaults on the back of a horse. It is different looking because we have what's called spotters on both sides of the horse. Because for her particular version of MS, or how it's manifested in her body, her right leg is weaker. And she also has one SCM is always chronically contracted. So her neck is a little bit at an angle most of the time. So for those that aren't aware of what multiple sclerosis does to the body, it attacks the myelin sheaths on the nerves. And so that's why those that have MS, it manifests differently, because when the nerves are attacked, people have different ways that it impacts them. For her, weaker right leg and that chronic SCM activation. Others, it's different, like verbal things. Sometimes they have dizziness, things like that. And she can't bring her head down or back, or else she will get dizzy. So when we're doing moves, we aren't having her roll around because we don't want her to get dizzy, for example.
That'd be bad on the back of a horse, definitely.
Bad.
Yes.
Yes.
And you came across this organically. Mm-hmm. And how has it evolved?
When I came back to work just teaching lessons at this barn, they're like, hey, we had this lady. She was teaching the therapeutic riding and vaulting program, but she's retiring. So we're going to let, we can't like do all the classes right now, but you have the vaulting experience. You know the horses, and we only have one person. We know it's not your specialty, but would you be willing to teach her? So I was like, okay, here we go. It'll just give me more experience.
Jump right in. Here we go. And plus, with your medical background, that's a good thing to have, the medical knowledge of what MS is, even though it manifests so many different ways.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't realize just how much my athletic training background specifically would help, because we as athletic trainers, we have so much training in rehab. And at University of Idaho, they also gave us a specific class that focused on the nervous system too, not necessarily with MS related stuff, but just like how the nervous system is involved and how pain responds to it, so things like that. So as I've been going about teaching this lady, it's quite amazing. You get her on the horse, you just have her sit on the horse. We do use a ramp to help her get on, so she doesn't have to mount the traditional way, because she can't. So you bring the horse next to the ramp, she's at about level of the horse's back, and then we help her sit, and we walk out of the ramp and we go around the arena. Throughout the hour lesson, her neck starts at the side, like I'm saying, but it straightens up throughout the entire lesson. It's quite amazing to see.
That's so awesome.
Yes, and her right leg is actually starting to get stronger of late, which we haven't, I've been working with her for 2 years now, and it's quite exciting. You might be able to hear in my voice that she's actually getting stronger, because we didn't think that she could get stronger since her nerves are being attacked. But she currently, right now, has a medication on board that helps suppress her immune system, which is helping suppress the attack on her nerves. And so my theory is, not that I'm an expert in any way, is that as I'm using my knowledge of rehab and we're trying to reactivate her muscles, just like we would if somebody's, you know, come back from surgery or whatever, it's actually working. And she's getting more of a mind-to-muscle connection again. She's actually able to lift her right leg while she's sitting on the horse and able to do all this stuff. And it's really, really exciting.
I can tell you're just a little excited. I see it on your face. I hear it in your voice. Whenever you can make a connection with your patient, let alone see improvement, it's just such a positive feeling. So congratulations. Kudos to you. That's really cool. Now, with this, I've heard of this. So we've had, like I told you earlier, several friends, colleagues that have gone into equine therapy. And how the patients respond to these horses, just amazing. Being able to straighten up, being able to strengthen, being able to interact and overcome whatever their specific issue is absolutely phenomenal sometimes. Just the changes you see during that 1 hour session.
Yep. 1 hour once a week. Yeah, because the motion of the horse, well, she can't walk on her own on the ground without a cane, right? So she can't walk normally. But when she gets on the horse, she's sitting and the horse's motion is activating a part of her nervous system that makes it feel like she's walking normally. And so that activation of her nervous system that way, that helps reset things in a way. So it's quite fantastic. And that, you know, like you're saying, that's not just isolated to her. It happens to a lot of people. And then there's the emotional connection aspect too. I know with a lot of therapeutic programs, they're, what do I want to say? They have patients that have behavioral issues. So they connect them to the horses. And I haven't taught those people, but it's really fun to watch from afar to see how they're screaming at people, but then they go to their horse and they're just so calm and they're connecting with them and they're relaxed and they're not anxious. And it's really, really amazing that way.
Yeah, that's just wow. Wow. So really what we're talking about is almost a therapeutic relationship between them and the horse, and just the bond between that client, that person during that session, and the animal. And that's got to just be, as a clinician, fun to watch.
Yes, it really is.
Now, horses are just like people. They have different attitudes daily. Do you have one specific horse, or do you have multiple, just in case the horse has a little bit of an attitude issue that day
Right.
that you work with?
Well, as far as the adaptive vaulting goes, yes, we definitely handpick them because one, they have to be calm. We can't have them what's called spooking, so when they
Yeah,
get
that
scared.
would be bad. I could see that. Yeah.
Right. But in case the horse does spook, that's why we have the sidewalkers, just in case they need to grab her off the horse's back. Yes, we don't just like pick any random horse. So we look for the ones that are calm. We look for the ones that are a little bit bigger, so they have a little bit longer and wider of a back, so there's just more of a platform. And then we looked and we test before we get a patient on to make sure that the horse is willing to let us do various moves on their back. Because if they're not willing, we're not going to make them. Because again, horse welfare is paramount.
Definitely.
Yes. So yeah, not just any horse for sure.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to aacitest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. I also presume it comes down to the patient as well, because not every patient is going to be ideal for vaulting, maybe just standard equine therapy, but not for vaulting.
Correct. That's very true. Some of them it's better to just sit facing forward in a saddle versus moving around. So it really does depend.
Yeah, I would be the person sitting facing forward. I would not be the standing vaulter base flyer. Yeah, I would be on that horse facing forward going, giddy up. Let's go, baby.
There you go.
There you go. Got to know your pluses and your minuses, and mine would be falling. Yeah, that would be bad. Just for me. Just for me.
Just for you, huh?
Just for me. Now, you've been doing this for a while. You have one patient at the moment,
Right.
and I presume you're hoping to build this program a little bit. What are some of the goals for the future with this?
Well, I'll be honest. I'm not sure if I'm going to build a therapeutic program, only because it's not my heart passion. This particular person I'm working with, I had a little bit of a connection with her before working with her. Because I've worked with her as an employee or a colleague, I should say, in the past. But being in this position has really shown me just how vital it is for us to have these programs in our region and throughout the country and the world. And we do have some like big programs in our area, like the greater Seattle area. And so that's why I really push people towards those programs at the moment if they ask about ours, just because we don't have the staffing or the horses. Amount of forces, I should say, to do more than what I'm doing right now. But as far as what I've learned and what I'm doing in this with this individual lady, I want to keep working with her. That is for sure, because she's teaching me a lot. We've even talked about maybe doing a case study on her, and she's really willing to do that.
Ooh,
Yep.
that would be cool.
Yep. Dr.
Very
Ludwig,
cool.
the same reaction. So.
Chris, you out there listening? Hey buddy, we got a little research project here for you, okay? Little case study.
Yep.
I'll be talking to him soon because we're supposed to be interviewing him. So I'll just mention to that.
Hey, there you go.
There you go. Little I'll help you out there, promise, promise.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's exciting. At this point in your career, we've got a couple things going on. We've got the industrial setting, we've got equine therapy. In the future, what direction are you hoping to go then?
I have a variety of passions. One obviously is with horses and with helping people connect with horses. The other, I actually really do enjoy working in the industrial sector. And the main reason for that is that I work with such a variety of people. I do enjoy working with athletes for sure, but when you meet people from like 10 different countries in one day and with such different backgrounds and such different like blue collar, white collar, just all that actually really fuels me. Really, really interesting to me to just to learn people and just to get to know them. So as I move forward, I really do have a goal of having my own like small business, whether it's a performance enhancement thing or my own practice eventually, where I can still do hands-on things. I actually have a friend, we graduated together from U of I. She just got her personal practice
Oh,
about
very cool.
Right, so that was inspiring. I was like, okay, I can do that. She's done it. Obviously, she's just starting out, but my goal is to have my own practice, and then I will tailor to the equestrian world, I think, because I think they need it. And while I love vaulting, quote unquote, regular riding, there's so many small muscles that you need and such like finite movements that you need and such amazing body control in order to be a balanced rider and affect your horse. So I know people can use the performance enhancement and they also need the medical side of things, both at competitions, but then outside of it as well. So I do want to tailor to them. But then I also have, like I said, a passion of just reaching out to everybody. So I don't want people to feel like they can't come to see me if they're not an equestrian. I also have first responders in my family, so that community is on my heart as well. So there's just a whole variety of things and people I want to reach out to.
You just want to help it all.
When I can, but I also know I have to like zero in so I don't.
A typical athletic trainer. No, I can help you. I can help you. I got to focus, but I want to help you.
Right.
So I totally understand that and I appreciate that. No doubt about it. We definitely have a love for the equine arena and helping others in the equine, the general population, but also the love of first responders. And I think as pseudo first responders, we really are first responders in many situations, just in athletic settings. We appreciate any first responder and always are willing to help them. So that makes complete sense to me anyway.
Yeah.
Now, in this perfect world where you can mesh them all together, how could you integrate equine therapy into, say, a comprehensive rehab program?
Yeah. That's a fantastic question. Let's
I come up with one every episode. So
well,
there's the one.
That was a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah, so let's think. In a hypothetical world, let's say I do get a first responder that comes to me. And let's say they're having some dysfunction in their back, because they often do, just with the nature of their jobs, whether it's because they're sitting in vehicles and then they're active right away as they're responding or whatever it is. A lot of the time, as we know, they lose that mind to muscle connection and that awareness of like what's going on in their body. Yeah. But when you are working with horses, you have to have a certain awareness. And the horses, in a way, in a gentle way, they force you to have awareness because they're what's called a prey animal. So they're the ones in the wild that get hunted. So they are hyper aware of all other people.
Okay.
Yeah, they can actually sense our heartbeat too. So if they sense our heartbeat increasing, they're like, okay, what's going on? Why are you stressed? Like, why is the heart rate going up? So it teaches you to modulate your own emotions and what you're doing. And then when you're on your back too, kind of like with my MS patient, it teaches you how to isolate your body too and how to control your core, especially because if you're floppy, you're obviously going to fall off the horse, but you also have to like isolate your hip movement from your shoulder and elbow movement as they're connected to the reins, isolated from your lower leg, all those things. So I think some combination of, in an ideal world, of working with those patients hands-on, so like manual therapies, and then some cognitive awareness with the horses, and then also some type of, you know, rehab on the ground. I think a combination like that would be a fantastic ideal world right there with those patients.
That sounds like a hell of a world to me. That sounds like a fun hour session for any clinician. I would love that.
Right.
I'd be a patient just to see what it's like.
Right.
Lord knows I need to engage my core a little bit better. So that's a good way to figure it out.
And I find with the industrial sector, there are so many people that are no longer aware of how their bodies move, just because we have so much technology and we're in our cars a lot and all this stuff. So we aren't out in nature as much, moving around and just doing things with our bodies. And so giving the average person that doesn't have a quote unquote injury, just the awareness, body awareness, is a passion of mine in the industrial sector right now. But then that could help with the horses too.
Oh, completely. Very good idea. I love it. I love it. So anybody interested in helping Shelby make that happen, just remember, when she opens her clinic, she might need a little extra funding. So you can be part of this cutting edge clinic at some point, right?
Yes, please.
Yes, please. There we go. I love that. Now, in that perfect world, how would you measure your outcomes? That would be really phenomenal to do, but how would you figure out, okay, we're going the right direction?
Right. I mean, as far as patient to patient, obviously you have your standard outcome measures like your written paper ones. So you can always use those. I know subjective from the patient isn't always the most accurate per se, but really when it comes down to it with any patient, what they think matters the most. So
very true.
Yeah. So I find that sometimes, like, especially when we're frustrated with a certain patient, we're like, oh my gosh, they don't understand the pain scale or whatever. But it's like, but they're feeling this angst, physical or mental or whatever, for some reason. So a big outcome measure for me, at least, would just be that subjective feedback from the patients and being like, hey, how do you feel beforehand? How do you feel afterwards? Can you also describe to me the process you just went through? Because again, as we know, if people can describe what's happening to them and why they're doing what they're doing and why their bodies are reacting certain ways, then we know that they get that neuromuscular feedback quicker and they reinforce it more. So there's that. As far as outcome measures in the community, well, I think that's a lot of subjective things also.
Totally agree. Yeah.
So much subjective. We'll just have to see how the community responds. But I already know from the little I do in this area, or the lot I do, I guess, in some respects, that people want it and they need it and they're just waiting for it. I just need to give it to them in a format that's easily accessible and that's I can do on an ongoing basis.
And that's probably the hardest part for you at this point in your career.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly.
But I'm sure the outcome for your current patient has to be quite positive if you keep going back every week and doing more and more. That individual must be really enjoying their sessions.
Yeah, every week she says, this is the best hour of my week. Every week, because she comes once a week. And she's like, I would do this every day if I could. I was like, I would too.
What a fantastic profession that would be if you could do that every day. Those were your four tens, right? That would be
right.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Something to think of.
Yep.
Something to think of. Going back to when you first started and you were thinking about getting into the field, did you ever think about doing this combination of industrial, traditional athletic training, enrolling into the equine? Did that ever, merging your two passions, ever even come to mind until it happened?
Not when I first graduated, no. I wasn't looking for a job right after graduation in the industrial sector per se. I was just looking at jobs in general. And I knew I wanted to have a work-life balance that allowed me to ride because I am trying to develop my skills as a rider also. And I really value that. And I also got my first horse like a year ago, so I want to spend time with him.
Congratulations. And what's that horse's name?
His name is Onyx. And guess what color
Ooh.
He is?
Not white.
Well, mostly not white. Black, just with the little crescent moon that's white on his forehead.
Oh, very cool.
He knows he's handsome too, and everybody else knows it also.
I love it. He knows he's handsome. I love it.
Yep. So no, I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting to like the industrial sector as much as I did because I didn't get into AT to work in the industrial sector. I got into it to work with athletes because that's what I've been my entire life.
But what we find out is industrial setting, they're industrial athletes.
Exactly.
They really are. And what they're able to do physically sometimes exceeds expectations of even an athlete, right?
Yes, because they're doing this for their jobs and their livelihood. So, I mean, there's a lot on the table for especially, you know, like collegiate athletes and professional athletes, but there's a lot on the table for them too, because it's their livelihood. So if they're out for like an L&I claim or whatever it is, that's stressful. And so it matters a lot to them that they can continue doing their jobs. It's a big deal for them.
Now, again, going back to my sister, who's an English teacher, you said L&I claim. Can you explain what that is for her?
Yeah, so labor and industries. So That is where, if they got hurt on the job, they go through their company's medical program or whatever. And then through the state, normally they can get an L&I claim. And so that's where the company and the state covers their medical costs because the injury happened at work.
I know in California we call them workers' comp. Just different words, same idea. Got it. Okay. Want to make sure everybody knew, including my sister, what we were talking about. Always good. Always good. We're talking about industrial setting. We're talking about equine therapy in the future. 15, 20 years from now, everything goes perfect. Where do you see yourself?
Gosh. I mean, I still see myself in Washington because it's, like you said, it's beautiful.
Gorgeous. Really is.
Unless you don't like the rain, then sorry for you. Shouldn't come. I like it. It doesn't rain a lot. So I'll still be here. My ideal would be to be riding myself most days because I find that it's really valuable to keep riding because that helps me understand my equestrian patients more. And then I would also, again, ideally have my own practice business. And I'd be working with people with that most of my time, but then also teaching regular horseback riding lessons too. That would be
just
my
because
idea.
Of the passion and the love.
Yes. Correct.
Yes, I get that. I get that. We always want to go back where we came from. And many of us, it's athletics of some sort. And in your case, it's horse riding. That's fantastic.
Thankfully, it's a sport I can do my entire life. Unlike, you know, something that's more impactful, like soccer or gymnastics.
Yes. Injury prevention. How, as a rider in the future, would you educate your patients on prevention of injuries and strategies in that field?
Yes. So I know I've said this a lot already. Having a lot of body awareness is paramount because when you are riding, whether it's vaulting or it's some other discipline, it's not just your body you're affecting. You're on the horse, and horses are so sensitive. You can just change your body weight in the saddle a fraction of an ounce, and they sense that. I mean, they can feel a fly on their skin.
That just amazes me. That totally amazes me that such a large, beautiful, wonderful animal is so sensitive to something
right.
like that.
And that's one reason why it's so incredible to work with them and helps you get such great body awareness. So that would be one thing, just helping people become more aware of their own bodies, because that's not very prevalent right now. But then also, just a whole lot of core, core and hips.
It always goes back to core. It always goes back to core.
It just does. Can't get around it. No matter what you want to do, just can never get around it.
My athletes don't believe it. And I sit there going, guys, but I have a six pack, Mr. Halleck. I don't care if you have a eight pack. Your core is weak, buddy. You just done a lot of sit-ups.
Yeah, sit-ups don't equal core strength.
Not one bit. They just don't get it.
Yeah. Hopefully one day they will.
Well, the jury's still out. So we can hope. We can always hope.
We
have to hope, right?
Yeah, we kind of have to, or else we despair. So,
no despair allowed. Nope, not at all. Not at all. It's too sunny and pretty down here. I'm not allowed to despair.
There you go.
But the rain is coming. But I like rain. That's why I went to Northern Cal for college. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It keeps things green and clean. It's so nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I love the Washington area. So pretty.
So pretty. Yep. All the mountains.
We have to agree. Beautiful mountains.
Yeah, mountains on all sides.
Yep. You can't argue with that. That's just gorgeous. You're not going to believe this, but we're already coming up on an hour.
That's crazy.
Yeah. See, I promised you this wasn't going to be difficult.
I
promised you it'd be painless. And so far, have I kept my promise?
Yeah, I guess.
Yes, no. A little tiny bit. Okay, I'll take that. You've got a long day ahead of you. I know I do. And I don't want to keep you too long, but I've just got a couple more questions for you. One is more question I like to ask people towards the end. And if you could go back and look at either yourself or a colleague that was thinking about going in your direction, what advice would you give them?
Man, I would say always pursue the options. Even if you don't think it's going to work, just like if you have a little like idea or you have a little opportunity, just go after them, because sometimes that leads into really, really big things. That's what happened with my friend with her practice now. And also make sure you have connections with people. Network.
Network. Oh my God. How many times has that come up? So often we hear network. Yep. And people don't believe us till they get on the other side. They go, wow, I should have networked more.
Yeah. You know, and also make sure that you're really nice to people, because that's going to endear you to so many people. And like, I've talked with people, like I said, I work in a, like with a big company in the industrial sector. And so I meet people. It's not like I'm working with all of them, but then people come in and they say they've heard of me. And I'm like, I've never met you in my life, but just because the word spreads, whether you like it or not. So
hopefully it's always good, right? That's what you're hoping for. And let's face it, networking here and keeping good thoughts and good comments. You had no idea I knew Chris Ludwig. Excuse me, Dr. Ludwig. And he comes up and it's like, hey, wait a minute. We have that network connection. Right. It's such a small world.
Such a small world.
Don't burn a bridge.
Don't burn a bridge.
Because it will come back. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Network. And always be kind. I love that. Now, the last question. This is the big one.
Okay.
How do you feel about our profession and the future of our profession?
There's a reason I got into athletic training, because I find it so unique and so special. When I was younger, I thought I wanted to do nursing. Decided I didn't want to for various reasons. And when I found athletic training, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is one of the most amazing medical professions in the world, because we do such a variety of things and we get to connect with our patients day in and day out, versus most healthcare professionals, especially if they're like EMTs, they only see their patients once and they're gone. But then like doctors, nurses, they see their patients maybe, you know, a couple minutes.
Yeah, that's it.
Maybe it's a year, whatever. If you have issues going on, then you see them more, and that's not ideal. But like, we're the only healthcare practitioners that I know of that we can actually make connections and lifelong impacts on our patients. And then we also have the variety too, because like I mentioned, I like the variety of things we can do, the rehab, the evaluations, the preventative, all those things. So I think as a profession, it's amazing. I think for longevity, I think we have a steep mountain to climb, only because now, especially that, you know, like we have to get a master's and like our standards are higher, which is good because that makes us better healthcare practitioners. I think to keep people in the profession, one, we have to tell them how amazing it is and encourage them to stay in it. But we have to make sure that they don't get burned out.
Amen.
We all tend to be a little bit like you and I are in that, like, we want to help everybody. We want to do all the things.
I can do it. I can help you. Yes.
Yeah, especially. So I think we need to learn how to be, I guess, again, more aware of ourselves, which I guess is just my theme in this talk.
It really has become that, which is awesome.
Yeah. So we don't get burned out. But then also, yeah, just longevity in the career. There are different aspects that we could go into, but I think a lot of us know about that. Like the pay on average is not as good as any other healthcare profession that I'm aware of, for example. And we're working on that as a profession, but there's just a lot that goes into it. So I think there's hope, but I also think there's a lot of work to do to keep athletic training going and not fizzle out.
You know what? For a person, quote unquote, fresh out of the pot, I think you got your head on really well and you really got a good pulse for this. So it has been fantastic talking to you for the last hour. I've learned so much about vaulting, the industrial setting, equine therapy. This has been amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm glad it became painless as we went through this, and hope to have you back sometime.
Yeah, I love to.
Great. Thanks, Shelby. You have a fantastic day. Enjoy your Friday patient, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Have a great day. Thanks for being on Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Haller. It is produced by Gabriel Haller. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Halleck Consulting, LLC.